experience has been one where I thought AI could make a big difference. If you look at the way that large language models works and the way that it can translate between the different modes of communication between video, text and images now, I think there is a real opportunity to rethink how experiences are provided for different industries. A lot of times experiences today have been based on yesterday's technology is how I look at it. And a lot of that has been you put the impost on the customer to provide data, to do a bit of the manual grunt work, data entry, provide your forms and documents, sometimes over and over again, even though you're already a customer of the bank. And so if I think about the opportunity that AI has, is you can rethink those experiences.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Keep Moving Forward, the podcast from X-Team for tech professionals who are passionate about growth, leadership, and innovation. I'm your host, Gemma Versace, Chief Customer Officer at X-Team. In every episode, we sit down with leaders who are redefining how technology teams work, grow, and lead. People who understand that performance begins with connection. Today, I'm joined by Will Jung, Chief Technology Officer at nCino. Will has spent his career at the intersection of banking and technology, moving from engineering and transformation roles inside a major financial institution to leading the global engineering team at nCino. As a former customer who now guides the product and technology strategy, he brings a rare view into how banks are navigating AI-driven change from both sides of the table. In our conversation, Will talks about the real meaning of AI transformation inside regulated industries, why automation and agents should start with the problem rather than the hype, and how human augmentation, not replacement, is the foundation of nCino's strategy. He explains how AI is reshaping credit analysis, customer experience, risk posture, and operational intelligence. He also discusses why banks must design for trust, explainability, and speed at the same time. Will also shares the cultural insights he's gained leading globally distributed teams, the organizational changes required to become an AI-native company, and the mindset that leaders need to stay curious, grounded, and focused on value as technology shifts around them. Let's get started. Hi, Will, and welcome to Keep Moving Forward. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Gemma. Pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. Well, let's get straight into it. And I think a great place to start would be asking if you don't mind walking us through your journey into tech leadership and what has led you to your current role at nCino.
Yeah, so I started my career as an engineer at a bank working in the technology division and quickly shifted roles into transformation and product. And as part of that, got into a leadership position at the bank, managing technology and product there. Obviously, worked with a lot of partners and technology partners like nCino. I was a customer at nCino before joining them recently, about a year and a half ago, as a GM of product. And then about 8 months ago, I got the opportunity to lead the technology engineering team globally here and now based stateside in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Yeah, fantastic. And it's great to also hear about another Australian coming over to the US, and particularly in the tech space is absolutely fantastic. And you've mentioned nCino, and with nCino works at the intersection of finance and technology, two industries that are currently being reshaped by AI. What does AI transformation mean in that context today for you?
Yeah, it's a good question because I think there's probably two ends of the spectrum. One, I think when we look at those two industries and technology and finance, AI transformation seems to be another word for optimization. And there's been a lot of opportunities to use AI to optimize those industries, whether it's through engineering capacity or whether it's to reduce cost and total cost of ownership across technology. So that's been a key side. I think the other side for the AI transformation really, and I think is a bit underbaked today, is the experience side of AI. It's really using AI to transform how we actually provide the services that across the technology and especially the finance industry has been providing to its customers.
Yeah, fantastic. As part of the research for the podcast today, obviously we've been listening to some of the other podcasts that you've been involved in and some of the content that you've shared. And One of the things that you've said is that AI experience is underhyped, and you just touched on that in your answer there as well. What can you give me a little bit more detail on that? What do you mean by that? And especially in a sector like banking, where accuracy and trust is just so incredibly paramount.
Yeah, I think when I first saw AI come out a few years ago, and then obviously recently with consumer AI really taking off, experience has been one where I thought AI could make a big difference. If you look at the way that large language models works and the way that you can translate between the different modes of communication between video, text, and images now, I think there is a real opportunity to rethink how experiences are provided for different industries. And if I think about banking specifically, you know, we think of banks as partners to your financial life, financial well-being, right? And I know a lot of banks think that way in terms of providing that those services to the customers. So really, a lot of times experiences today have been based on yesterday's technology is how I look at it. And a lot of that has been you put the impost on the customer to provide data, to do a bit of the manual grunt work, data entry, provide your forms and documents, sometimes over and over again, even though you're already a customer of the bank. And so if I think about the opportunity that AI has, is you can rethink those experiences, right? So a lot of times, even digital banking, it's just a paper form digitized. But now there's a real opportunity to rethink. Maybe it's not a digital form anymore. We've seen the chat experiences, and maybe it's chat with some more insights, pre-populated, it's more verification by the client. Or it could be even voice activated as an example. So I know a lot of people, you know, are on the road. They don't want to type and sit on the front of a computer anymore. I know a lot of people don't own computers anymore. A lot of things they do is on the mobile. And so in that case, typing on a mobile is pretty hard. So if you use your voice, again, to be able to initiate those experiences, have those experiences with your bank, I think that's where really AI can do transform that sector in terms of the experience they provide to the customers.
What a fabulous viewpoint also and focus point for somebody like yourself in a CTO position, because, you know, when we think about AI, a lot of people that want to adopt it and feel the need to be constantly including more tools for their teams, it is more about getting the internal process improvements or internal optimization, whereas the way that you're looking at it, which is just such a fabulous viewpoint, and somebody who is the chief client officer here at X-Team, it's music to my ears, is that for you, the focus is absolutely on the experience of your customers and how easy it is for them to be able to utilize the AI advancements that you're giving them for the ease of use, but also such a positive experience. And that is just such a wonderful way to look at it. And no doubt you're getting some fantastic feedback back from your clients having such a focus on that. That's fantastic. And I guess a little bit of a lead on question from that is, with so much pressure to adopt agentic AI across the industry, across the banking industry, you've also cautioned, though, against using AI for AI's sake. Where do you see that it's being misapplied potentially?
It's almost like the classic hammer and nail problem. You've got a big hammer now that can put in a lot of nails. Everything looks like a nail to you. And so we're seeing that across the industry. A lot of times, I think when people understand how to build enterprise scale agentic applications, a lot of that does come at a cost. There is a cost to it, whether it's an inference cost, whether it's an experience or latency cost. And there is, it's different types of architecture you need to provide. There's different things that are needed fundamentally. Your data architecture needs to be quite solid in the way that you provide context to your agents. And so, if you understand those, I guess, constraints or the real principles required around agentic architecture, you do need to think through what problems you're solving with that hammer. It needs to be fit for purpose. And sometimes the cost and the effort behind it isn't, you know, worth the ROI.
Yeah, thanks for that. It's a really good call out. And when, I guess, an example, if you'd be able to share an example of, say, a real life example where, you know, simple automation delivered better outcomes than a more complex AI solution. I know you've just kind of called that out as being something that it can and does happen. Are you able to give us a little bit more detail around an example or a potential experience that you've had where that has been the case?
Yeah, sure. I think one of the I mean, this comes from principles we look at when we look at agentic. It's what is a complex, repetitive pattern matching needed across different data sources? And that's generally where we find really the agentic workflows and agentic or agents are really, you know, proving their value here. And so our example is, I'll use credit monitoring as an example because that's something that we've looked at. So in banks with credit monitoring, we look at different types of information. There's financial statements we look at, previous cash flow and the current cash flow of the businesses, some macroeconomic factors, and all the different data sources we use that a credit analyst would generally have to use and look at really to make a decision. And so really that's where we found agents were really good at pulling the data, understanding the insights, finding the patterns, and providing suggestions to our credit analysts, right, to really go against that and to find actually what activities should the bank have with the client. You know, is it there's conversation that they needed? Is it a simple extension of a review, et cetera? So that's a classic example. Now, where it can get complicated is then if you add another agent on top of that, go, okay, why don't you go against the credit policy for me as well? But a lot of times policy is very rules-based and this can just be automated. And so rather than having another agent and the complexity of, I guess, a non-deterministic rules processing versus a deterministic rules processing, especially in a regular environment, that's where you need to think, well, actually, another agent here wouldn't make sense. This is where a simple automation, right, policy that's automated with rules, that's a lot better coupled with an agent that's, you know, giving you the insights, gives you the credit analyst, then gives you the credit as a credit analyst, you get the best of both worlds.
It's a really good point. And, you know, you were talking about earlier around there being so much hype around, you know, high ROI AI adoption and how everybody's first instinct is to say, not how can we do this better? How do we do this differently using, you know, some sexy AI or some really complex AI that we can then take as a reference story to show the market how good we are? How do you guide your teams and your clients as well away from some of that hype and really more towards around the really specific high ROI AI adoption that you can deliver to not only internally at nCino, but also for your clients as well?
I think we always anchor back to the problem we're solving. And I think that's really important. So even our clients, they appreciate that we understand banking, that we understand the regulation, the compliance requirements that they go through and the burden of proof that they need to provide to regulators that they've thought through of the architecture and the data lineage, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's a great start. And then we show how not that AI will increase the burden of compliance and regulation, but how it can make it easier. So I think that's a real key point, right? In the sense that hey, AI, not only does it do the sexy things, but it can also make your mundane things that we need to do as an industry to make sure that we are protecting our clients' money and doing the right thing, but we can do it in a smarter way and a faster way. So if you anchor back to that problem and if you anchor back to, hey, this is also continue to help your risk appetite, this is actually helping your risk posture even better, that's a great way to show banks and also internally to show, hey, we are solving real problems for banks. And that's when you see the light bulbs click, the adoption clicks, because it's not just, hey, we're going to give you more AI tooling on top of everything. And we just plastered AI everywhere. It's no, we are solving a real problem for you. We thought about this deeply and we're using the best technology available to solve your problem in the best way possible.
Yeah, that's so important and such a reason why clients would have so much trust in nCino is around, you talk about, you know, making sure that their risk posture is in good shape. I think that, you know, it's a really good point to be able to ram home the fact that, as you said, you are providing opportunities for some of the more, you know, interesting and sexy enhancements, but really making sure that you are doubling down and supporting them from a risk profile and risk posture perspective is just so hugely critical and such a great value proposition that nCino offers for your clients as well. Changing gears a little bit, you've described nCino's strategy as human augmentation, even using the term digital partners, which I think is just an absolute genius marketing move on you guys to be doubling down on, you know, the digital partner side of things. Can you unpack what that means in practice?
Yeah, so we've got a strategy across our I guess, the agentic side of our platform to really be the digital partner. So we have persona-based agents. So as an example, there's an executive partner, there's a risk management partner, there's a processor partner as well. And these digital partners, what we've done is, again, going back to the core proposition of a bank is to, again, provide financial advice to make sure that customers can trust the financial institution they're partnering with, you know, big life decisions. If you think about it, a lot of the finance is really driving a lot of life decisions, whether you're buying and growing your business, et cetera. So with that in mind, we know that the problems that the banks are solving for customers don't change. The jobs they need to don't change. The way that they need to make sure that, you know, proper due diligence is done, making sure that the money's safe, making sure that we're doing a proper risk assessment, right? And making sure that, you know, the customers are in the best financial position as possible. That doesn't change. The processes around it can change because a lot of the processes that we've developed over the years in the industry is based on, again, yesterday's technology. So with today's technology, the processes need to change, I think. And with our digital partner strategy, it's really taking that persona and focusing on what are the core problems, what are the core jobs to be done that those personas across the bank need to do? How do we make sure that all those things are done in a trusted, regulated way, in a smarter way, using agents, which then unlocks the people? Because I think this is where, as an industry, we've promised personalized banking for about 10, 20 years now with the digital transformation. I think we're still a long way to go in terms of personalized banking. And this is where you unlock the people to really develop relationships with the customers, develop that personalized service, because banking is emotional. It's, again, big life decisions. There's a lot of trust that you need with your banker. So if your banker isn't spending so much time doing the administrative, boring, mundane work and letting process overtake their day-to-day by allowing them to focus on customers, I think that's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, definitely. And you're so right as well. They've been able to free up the individual bankers to be able to have more connectivity, more engagement, develop more of that customer development relationship is only going to serve better for the client, but also ultimately the bank, because there is that greater trust. There's that higher likelihood that customers will invest more, bring more into the bank and be a lot more trustworthy of any advice and unique and specific tailored advice that's coming back their way. So it's super critical to be able to, yeah, give your banking clients a lot more comfort that they're going to have the time to be able to give that unique service to create that wonderful trusting partnership that is just so important between a client and their bank. How do you balance the need for explainability and auditability with the push towards smarter, faster decision making? Because as you mentioned, you know, everything kind of comes back to wanting to create the best experience for your client, and you want to be able to move it at rapid speed. You want to be able to give advice or decisions very quickly to the client as a bank, but you also need to obviously have that audit trail and the opportunity to be able to explain why and how this decision was made. How do you balance those delivering on those two things?
Yeah, so I don't think auditability or explainability are choices. I think in a regulated environment like banking, that's a non-starter. You have to have the basics. And it's interesting because you might think that going for the speed to decision and going back to auditable explainability later can be a choice. But what ends up happening is the bankers don't trust that decision. And so they spend time trying to work out how the system made that decision. And so you actually end up losing the speed. But if you design it upfront with the explainability and auditability, and they can trust that decision making, that's when you get the speed. And so in a way, if you build your system, right, with that trust and with a way that a bank can follow it and understand how the system made that decision, that will actually give you the speed that you're desiring.
Yeah, great. And I think you're exactly right, is that it's not, you know, the two aren't mutually exclusive from each other. You need to, one, they both help the other in developing an overall really good experience, but also helping, as we said, to continue to develop the trust piece as well is just so critical. What organizational changes are needed to, in your opinion, to truly become an AI native company? And that is beyond just adopting tools. What's your opinion on that?
We thought hard about this because that was a journey that we started a couple of years ago. And really, there are three things that I think about. The first one is the problems that you're solving still matter. And so if you think about it, it could be strategy that we think through. And strategy is really, the way I think about it, just choices. Choices that you make on what you are doing and what you're not doing. Because everyone only has a limited capacity, right? And so being crystal clear on that strategy and the choices that you're making as a company, that is critical, because getting everyone aligned, understanding the customer problem, getting closer to the customer, like nothing, no amount of technology or difference in technology can change that, right? And that's how you win. And so that's part one. The second part is context. And so we know that context engineering is a big thing across agentic architectures, making sure that you get the right information at the right time. But that goes beyond just the technology and architecture. Context across your organization is so important. So we've got to talk about strategy. Every role in your company needs to be on the same mission, right? And understand the goal and how their role contributes to that. And so if you're not clear on that, no matter how much AI you've got, no matter how much code you're developing, I think you're just going to get a lot of code, but no real outcomes. And so that's critical with that context part. And then the third part is your people. Again, I think people are the driving force of your organization. Your organization is your people. And so how you train them up in the sense of not just being aligned with the strategy and the context, but then being equipped with the tools, being equipped with first principles thinking, the critical thinking. I think that's even more important now, right, with the tools available. And so having that as an organization, no matter what size your organization is, I think is critical. I think that plus now, then you've got the tooling like AI across the different ways of, you know, faster coding, faster design, faster product management, all of that then, and faster customer success and support, all of that then comes into that strategy and context and the people.
Yeah, it's a really good answer. And I think that your point about really making sure that you've got really good breadth and depth of buy-in across all parts of the business is just so hugely critical. And I was recently speaking to the CTO at Thomson Reuters, and he was talking about the fact that they have had 80% adoption with their AI tooling because they did mandate it from the top and because they wanted to be able to show their clients exactly how to go about trying to get that buy-in. I guess as an extension on that, what advice would you give to a CTO or VP of engineering who's currently feeling a little bit behind in AI and doesn't really necessarily know where to start, whether it be around how you specifically engage to be able to get that buy-in and excitement across not only your team, but the broader business, or what some of the strategies, if you're comfortable sharing, Encino has implemented, whether it be like the example from TR where they very much mandated it to try and get the buy-in and they've had success with that. What's some advice that you'd give to, you know, a CTO or VP of engineering listening who really just wants to know how to bounce the ball on implementing an AI strategy for their business?
Yeah, so I think it needs to be twofold. I do agree with the top-down approach in the sense of there needs to be a sense of urgency given in terms of the tooling and being equipped and educated on what the new technology can do. So that I definitely agree with. And we've done that at Encino to an extent as well. The other part as well is you also do need bottoms-up engagement. And that's where really listening to your engineers. A lot of engineers are using AI, whether you know it or not, whether it's personally or in the office. And we found that the same. And this is where we landed on a few partners and tools using AI IDE especially. But really a lot of that came through feedback from our engineers themselves. You know, I've been using this. And then balancing that across our strategic partnerships, we landed on a few tools and going, yep, company-wide, this is what we're doing. And I think making the tools available company-wide is to show that there is a real investment here. And then just sharing. I think creating culture of collaboration and sharing is every Friday, we have something called Innovation Fridays at Encino where you don't have to be in engineering. You can be in customer success, support, sales as well. Just showing how you're using the AI tooling and what innovation you're doing in your day-to-day work. And just seeing your peers being able to do that with, you know, approved tooling, but also being able to innovate to make their lives better and getting the license to question the current processes and changing the processes with the new tools. that's always powerful as well. So a combination of that top-down and bottom-up engagement and just seeing your peers look at it and being able to really, you know, 10X themselves or whatever it might be is really powerful.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I speak from experience here at X Team about how we're doing just that as well, is that, you know, there's certain parts of the business that I look after that we're getting some of those automations, those quick automations done. But now we're getting access to some really fantastic additional AI tooling and being able to see the uptake, but then the successes across the team, not only within my team, but more broadly across X Team. I definitely agree that, you know, it's a little bit from column A and a little bit from column B. It's a combination of the two. You've worked across many regions, obviously now sitting out of the US and with a distributed global team. Do you notice any unique strengths or challenges in how AI innovation is adopted between Australia or the US or Europe? Are there any kind of nuanced differences that you're happy to share?
I do think culture plays a big part. And so, Gemma, you'll know this being Australian as well. Australians have this tall poppy syndrome where, you know, you don't talk about yourself, right? You always laugh at yourself. That's a big thing in Australians. And so I think what that we see is it's a lot more grounded in the sense of show me, like prove to me first, and then I'll get on board. I find in the US, it's very different. US is, I guess they call it the land of opportunity for a reason. And so a lot of it is based on, hey, there's this opportunity. So let's get on board to see what this opportunity is like.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, exactly. So really I see that difference a lot. And even when I speak to customers, you know, when I speak to CIOs and CTOs in Australia, a lot of the questions, a lot of the discussion is around risk. It's around audits and security, which by right we talk about. And, you know, not saying the United States, we don't talk about that at all, but United States, we talk more about the opportunity and the value provided. And, you know, we talk about both things in both regions, but where I spend more time speaking to really, I think kind of reflects that culture and it's a bit different in that sense. So I think culturally, that is something that I've been aware of and just understanding, okay, where am I talking to? And again, it's based on the regulation and the market, et cetera, as well, right? So being aware of that and just being exposed to it has been really interesting for sure.
Yeah, fantastic. You've mentioned previously that nCino is building anonymized benchmarking and portfolio intelligence. Can you tell us more about that work and where it's headed?
Yeah, so we've got a rich data set of 13 plus years in the industry across thousands of banks globally. And, you know, there are banks that partner with us who have provided consent to use, again, anonymized data to improve our product. And also we have started to provide intelligence back to those customers as well. So customers can see their operational analytics across the platform to see how their processes are working on our platform, where the rework's happening, where the bottlenecks are, and really fine tune that. And also being able to see benchmarking across their peers. And again, it's all anonymized. You can't see who your peers are, but it does give you a sense of, okay, how am I doing in the market? Now, what are my peers doing from an operational perspective? And that's really interesting for us as well. And from a product perspective as well, we use that data to make sure, hey, are we focused on the biggest problem of our customer base as well? Hey, we're noticing this step of the workflow is an area customers are really struggling with. Let's deep dive on that. Let's have some customer interviews, understand, you know, where are the problems? What are they going through? Is it something in the system that we can help them with? Is it regulation, et cetera? It just allows us to have a richer data-driven conversation with our customers and also just provide back to our customers, because I think that's where they're really getting that value from nCino, is that industry understanding and expertise.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, talk about providing a win for your clients, as you said, with such a wealth of data being king available to them for that comparison purposes, but also for the upskilling purposes within them and their business. But also on the flip side, for the data that then you can consume from nCino to then translate that into, you know, decisions that are going to help with continuous improvement or further value creation for your clients using the data to determine what those initiatives and potential new enhancements and products could look like. So yeah, fantastic way to be able to make sure that there's a win for your client, but also a really fantastic win for nCino to continue to drive and create that value for your client base as well. Last question, and it's a bit of a big one, but how do you personally keep moving forward?
That is a big question. So for me, very simply put, it's, I think, never staying still. And I think always understanding that there's always so much to learn. And for me, if I'm not learning something, if I'm not solving a new problem, it does, I think, for me, I get a sense of, am I, you know, really developing here in the current role, current company, or wherever it might be. So that's really the motivation. I love solving new problems. I love learning. And I think that's just an, you know, inner motivation that I do have. And I think you get motivated by having the same people around you. And so being in a technology company, you get the benefit of a lot of curious people and a lot of curious thinkers and innovators. And that always keeps you on your toes and, you know, with different perspectives. And that diversity, I think, is another important part. It's making sure that you have diverse people around you. Sometimes it's easy for us, especially in technology, even in banking to some extent, to be in an echo chamber. We were all talking about the same thing over and over again and just revalidating our own thoughts. And so just having diverse perspectives around you, not just in work, but in life, right? With people with completely different occupations. My wife, as an example, she's in the art side. She has no idea what I do, but that's different perspective is great, right? On life and just in general. So that keeps me going.
Fantastic. And now living in the States, there's a whole new level of different that you get to learn and experience and be a part of as well. So what a such
for
a
sure.
fantastic attitude. I love that, you know, everybody is there to be able to learn from and work with and only make everybody stronger through the diversification of different thoughts and people and minds. So thank you so much, Will. I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation and I know that our listeners will have as well. So thanks so much for your time and effort and all the wonderful answers and intel that you've been able to share with us today.
Thanks, Gemma. It's a pleasure.
My conversation with Will highlighted a powerful truth about applied AI. The tools matter, but the thinking behind them matters most. Will showed how the most successful AI strategies begin with clear customer problems, strong context, and teams who are aligned around purpose and outcomes. His approach to digital partners and human augmentation reframes AI as something that elevates expertise rather than replaces it, especially in industries where trust, compliance, and accuracy drive every decision. We also talked about AI adoption. Will was very clear that becoming an AI native company takes both top-down urgency and bottom-up curiosity. It requires equipping people with new skills, giving them the space to experiment, and ensuring that the systems they build are transparent enough to earn real trust. What stood out most was his mindset. Keep learning. Keep solving new problems. Keep surrounding yourself with the people who bring different perspectives. That is what helps teams move forward with confidence in a moment of rapid technological change. Join us next time for more conversations with technology leaders who inspire us to grow, lead, and innovate. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube Music. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your network.